Welcome to Business Lives by Vox Markets, the podcast that brings you closer to the people who shape the world of business. We give you an insight into the lives of the individuals who stand out from the crowd. For updates on the latest episodes, please subscribe to our channel.
And joining me on the podcast right now is owner of Dallas Mavericks basketball team, a shark investor on ABC's Shark Tank, and one of the most respected businessmen in America. It's billionaire investor Mark Cuban. Mark, thanks for doing the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I was reading about you, Mark, and I just assumed you came from a wealthy background, and that wasn't the case. You came from
No.
You came from quite a modest background, and you become a billionaire. Yeah. That's you know, it's very rare that anyone ever does that on this planet. And
well, I'm glad it was me.
The thing is that kind of success is hard to replicate. But if there's one sort of attribute you can put it down to, it took you from where you were to where you are today. What do you think it is?
I mean, you got to find something that you love to do, be relentless at being as great at it as you possibly can, and recognize that there's going to be a lot of roadblocks and stumbles and, you know, backwards and forwards, but you just have to keep on grinding. And, you know, I'm not going to say anybody can become a billionaire. There was a lot of luck involved for me, but I do think that anybody can really reach their financial goals if they set their mind to it.
Yeah, so it's essentially hard work, perseverance, and keep on, and obviously doing something you love. Is that right?
Yeah, because you know what? If you don't like it, nobody ever quits anything they're good at. And if you're good at it and you love it, then, I mean, good things can happen. Look, when I was broke, I was living six guys in a three-bedroom apartment. I was working as a bartender, then in sales. I still loved what I was doing, and I was having fun. But I was able to keep at it, even though I was broke, just because I loved what I was doing. And once I got into technology, and then I realized that this is something that's for me. I had an aptitude for it that I didn't realize, and I just started working harder and harder at it, but it wasn't work because I loved what I was doing.
Yeah. If someone sort of spoke to you at that age when you were broke and said, you know, in about 20, 30 years' time, you'll be owning a basketball team, you'll be on ABC's Shark Tank, you'll be a billionaire, would you believe them?
No, I would have told them, let's do another shot, let's do another beer, and then we could talk about it again, because we both would have had to have been drunk for me to even consider that.
I got to explain, over here it's called Dragon's Den, but you've been on Shark Investor since 2011, and you've invested, and you seem to do bigger money over there. You invest millions, and you've invested a total of $19.9 million. Is there a common theme amongst, you know, the companies you invest in?
Is there a common theme? Not a common theme per se. I mean, there's times when I'll invest in the entrepreneur. There are times when I just like the business idea, and it fits my skill set, so I'll invest. And there are times when I just think it's the right thing to do for any number of different reasons. But it's a little bit different because of television. And so I probably cut the entrepreneurs a little bit more slack on Shark Tank than I would just in normal business dealings.
We obviously don't get the show over here, but what's been the biggest success from that? And has there been a real stinker? We thought, what was I thinking?
I've probably invested in 70 plus companies since, you know, the 8 years, whatever it is, I've been doing the show. Mm-hmm. And so across the 70, there's been, I think, four that I've sold that have done really well. There's probably another five to 10, probably closer to 10 now, where I've made 5 to 10 times my money. And on the flip side, there are just some dumpsters, you know what I mean, that are just bad, you know, where, you know, because the way the show works is, you know, from Dragon's Den, we get maybe, you know, an hour to talk to them, then they edit it down for TV, mm-hmm. and then we get a chance to do due diligence after the fact. So you don't know as much as you'd like to about some of the companies. So some of them turn out to be bad, but that's just the way life works.
Looking at floated or listed stocks, are you sort of a regular sort of investor? I mean, on a personal book, or with you, if you're going to make an investment, do you have to tell a lot of people, or can you just, if you see a company you like, can you just go ahead and invest in it? What happens?
Yeah, if there's something I like, I'll just invest in it. And, you know, I'm a tech guy, so I typically tend to gear towards technology companies. So right now, my two biggest stock holdings are Amazon and Netflix.
Yeah.
And, I got a couple other dividend-paying stocks, but nothing very big. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, beyond that, I'm just really conservative.
Yeah. Okay. And so, I guess a lot of people who listen to this podcast like small cap stocks. You know, they like the chance of double, trebling, or even quadrupling their money. I mean, do you ever, you know, invest in smaller cap stocks at all?
Rarely. I used to more. But so what's happened over the past 20 years in the stock markets is there's so much money chasing fewer and fewer stocks. Like 20 years ago, there, at least in the U.S., there were 8,000 publicly traded stocks. Mm-hmm. Now there's fewer than 4,000. And back then, I don't even know how much money was in the market, but it's 10 times that much now. And so you have a lot smarter people chasing so many fewer stocks that, you know, if you're just, you know, when I would just trade stocks, right, I had to learn, and it was an expensive lesson sometime, that nobody's selling me a stock thinking it's going down, right? And you have to ask yourself, okay, why is this person or algorithm or whatever it may be on the other side selling me this stock? And what is it that I know that gives me an advantage? Do I understand this industry better? Do I understand this company better? Do I know the people at the company and I trust their management better? You know, what is it that makes me believe? And if your answer to that question is, I just think more people are going to buy it, and, you know, a lot of people are telling me about it, you might want to be careful, because typically in those situations, somebody's selling it to you for a good reason, which means they don't think it's going to go up.
Do you know what? It's often the case when people invest in a stock, they only think it's going to go up, and they never look at the bear case for it at all.
So I suppose, and then when they make a mistake, they don't get out fast enough, right? They think, I can't lose money. Look, when you're wrong, you're wrong. You just got to own it and get out and move on to the next one. Too many investors get stuck thinking, well, you know, I paid $4 a share, or I paid 40 cents a share, and it's 25 cents a share, and all it's got to do is go up 15 cents, and I'm back to even if it goes up 20 cents. Mm-hmm. But they fail to realize that there's 6 billion shares outstanding, you know, and it's hard to move even 15 cents when there's that many shares outstanding.
So going back a bit, what was the first deal you did when you thought, this is the big league now, I'm into the big league, I've done very well here? Do you remember that time when you thought, yes, I've sort of made it here, or on the way to making it?
Well, I mean, once I sold my company for billions, my first big deal was buying the Dallas Mavericks, and that was $285 million. So, you know, that was my big spend, and even to now, that's been my big spend. And that and buying a plane. So I bought a G5, and, you know, that was probably those two things are probably the most fun things I bought. But along the way, you know, when I first got started and I went from broke to selling my first company, and I bought a small house, but then I bought a lifetime pass on American Airlines. Wow. And I would just fly everywhere, fly anywhere. You know, I'd go to London just to have drinks. I'd go to, you know, to Vegas. I'd go to, you know, Moscow, wherever I wanted to go just to have fun. That was probably the first step where I thought, you know what? You know, working hard and making money is not a bad thing. I can have some fun with this.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, I mean, obviously, you talk about basketball there, and I was reading a bit about you, and obviously we're not a huge basketball nation in the UK, but I was reading, your passion is very deep. Not only have you obviously bought that Mavericks, but, I mean, I've seen the amount of fines you've got from being on the court. So, the good thing is, though, Mark, when you find, you sometimes match that fine with to charity.
Yeah, I always match it. It's kind of, imagine the EPL and just how crazy the fans are and some of the ownership groups are there. Well, I guess you don't like a lot of the American owners over there, but some of the UK owners, that just get all excited. I just love the game. Yeah. But I'll tell you this, here's a secret for you. My second favorite sport, rugby.
Is it?
Yeah, I played for a long time. And I mean, American rugby is nowhere near British or, you know, the All Blacks or anything like that. But, you know, I love the game. Absolutely love it.
Well, listen, I'm from Wales, and that's our national sport.
Absolutely.
In fact, we just lost to England last week, so that wasn't a good thing. But there we go. It was in England. It was in Twickenham, so they had a home advantage, I argue that.
Big-time home advantage.
Yeah, exactly. Let's move on to crypto. It's been crazy. You know, Bitcoin, the run it's had up to $20,000 and back down sort of $6,000, and it's back up to about $11,000. I mean, what's your thoughts on crypto, Mark?
You know, you've got to be careful. Look, I'm a fan of the blockchain. I've always been a fan of the blockchain. But crypto is kind of become a collectible. It's no different than collecting sports cars or collecting stamps or coins. It's the value right now is based on what somebody is willing to pay for it. And the more buyers, if you have more buyers than sellers, it's going up. If you have more sellers than buyers, it's going down. The challenge for crypto now in terms of the pricing is whether or not buyers can use margin. So what's happening, and you're getting a lot of small traders who come in and can't afford a whole Bitcoin, let's say at $10,000. Mm-hmm. So they put up $1,000, or they use credit or margin with their account, or they use their credit cards. And the good news of that is that it helps push the price up. The bad news is when things start going backwards, they get margined out And all of a sudden, all these small traders have got to sell. So you're going to see a lot of volatility. Now, what is it truly worth? Well, it's going to depend. Are they going to really stick to only 21 billion, a million Bitcoins being released? Or is there going to be some other type of change as Lightning comes in or other things come in that expand the total amount? Is Bitcoin going to be the final winner, or Ethereum going to be the final winner, or Litecoin, whatever, Bitcoin Cash? That's the uncertainty, because the technology is still in flux. Mm-hmm. So right now there's a lot of uncertainty, which means you're going to get a lot of volatility. But all that said, do I think crypto is going to be the currency of the future? No, I just think there's too many choices. But do I think it'll be a viable store of value or a viable transaction capability? Yes, I think, particularly with blockchain, there'll be unique opportunities. So all of that's a long way of saying, if you're a gambler, this is like going to Las Vegas, or it's like going to a casino and putting your money on red. Bitcoin could go to $100,000, it could go to $10, and it could all be in the same day. So if you're able to lose your money and you're willing to take a chance, great. Buy crypto. I own Bitcoin and I own Ethereum. Those are the only two. Yeah. But I don't trade them. I just put them away, pretend they're not there, and hope they go up.
Cool. And so when did you sort of get into those? Was that early on, or was it, or what?
No, I got into some early on. I mean, I bought like $50 worth like 6 years ago. But just so I understood it, I just opened up a Coinbase account, which has done really well, but I didn't really get into it. I think I bought real amount of Bitcoin in October and Ethereum in November. Mm-hmm. So it's paid off for me, but, yeah. I'm not in there trading in and out.
So you've obviously got a knack, Mark, of spotting a business that can do well, And So what is it then? Obviously people can sort of drill down into the balance sheets and all that, but when you're on Shark Tank, sure, and you see something, what is it? Is it the person? Is it the business? What is it that attracts you about a business?
All the above. I mean, it really depends. So, Shark Tank's a little bit different. Let's just say general investing. So with tech, I try to ask myself, is this something that's going to change the world? Mm-hmm. And if it's going to change the world, how is it going to change it? Who's going to be out there competing with it? Who is going to create problems for it? And are these the right entrepreneurs to do it? And, whether it's artificial intelligence, is it nanotechnology? There's just so many different new things, precision medicine, that are coming up right now, that it takes a lot of time to understand the tech. But because I'm willing to put in the time to understand the technology, I think I have a little bit of an edge to make investment decisions.
You must get pitched to quite a lot just off the cuff. Has anyone ever pitched to you and you've said yes, or you've had a meeting with them and liked it, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I get pitched everywhere, from the Lou to the you name it. I mean, people will pitch me any chance. I can understand that. I'm fine with it. But yeah, I've invested in companies that I've just met over email. If a company, Box.com, it's a public company. Aaron Levy pitched me as an investor when he was still in college. He pitched me Box in 2005, and I invested $250,000 without even having met him.
Wow, that's good. So as far as people, I mean, like you say, you are a billionaire, you're an exclusive club. Are there other sort of, business people that you respect and think, this guy is sharp, I like him a lot? Who like?
Yeah, I mean, guys that I think are sharp are, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, obviously. Mm-hmm. Guys I know fairly well that are incredible, like Mark Benioff from Salesforce.com, mm-hmm. Todd Wagner, who was a partner of mine, Bill Gurley, who's an investor. There's the list goes on and on and on. There's, the fascinating part is, I can sit and talk to these folks, and they're rich, but they're good people, and they'll share ideas and everything. But but beyond that, it's more about doing your own work.
Yeah.
No one gives you any shortcuts. I think where a lot of people go wrong is they think if they only had a mentor or somebody to help them or somebody to guide them, and that's rarely the case. I mean, having a mentor is okay. I mean, maybe it can save you a couple steps, but in reality, if you're going to get it done, if you're going to get to the financial levels you want, you've got to be willing to put in the work. When all my buddies were going out, I mean, I went 8 years without taking a vacation when I had my first company. I'd still go out and have fun, but while other people were taking vacations, I wasn't. While other people were going out, I was home reading, or working on a computer, writing programs and software. And I taught myself to write software. And so, you know, there are things that when I look at all these people who are really wealthy, the one thing that always tends to stand out is they focus on learning. They take it as a personal challenge to know more about what's going on in their industry or what's going on in some technology than anybody else. And they become maybe not experts, but really well versed in that area. And that's the difference. Most people aren't willing to take the time. They think there's some shortcut. They think there's somebody they can talk to. There isn't. You got to dig in. You got to be obsessive about it. You've got to really be willing to learn and continuously learn, because there's always, and I say this to myself all the time, you know, there's always somebody out there. There's some 18-year-old girl or guy trying to kick my ass, right? And, you know, when I was that kid, I was trying to kick the old guy's ass, and, you know, now they're trying to get me. And the only way I'm going to stay ahead is by outworking them, and I'll still do that to this day.
I know sort of cutting through over here, getting highlights or a lot of attention, is Elon Musk at the moment. I mean, do you know Elon?
I've never met Elon. I've never met him, but I'm obviously a fan because, you know, his ability to generate ideas and then follow up on them, and the fact that he goes all in, he puts up all his money, is phenomenal. So I give him a ton of credit.
Let's move on to politics a little bit. One question here on politics, because someone did ask you, a while back, if you're getting into the presidential race, and I think you get, you know, some good votes there. I think you should do it, because you're obviously a winner in that arena. But I saw that Trump sort of tweeted about Oprah, say she should take part. Yeah. And do you think Oprah would make a good president?
I don't think she'd be better than what we have, but Oprah's smart. I mean, I like Oprah, and she's smart, and she's kind, and she knows what she doesn't know. I think, you know, one key, whether it's me or anybody else, one key element that's missing in the White House right now is, you know, our president doesn't know what he doesn't know and doesn't try to find out. You know, I've just been talking to you about learning in order to be good at something, and that's not something he understands at all. And I think, you know, whether it's Oprah or anybody else, I think if you get in a president that's smart and is capable of understanding what's going on in the country and, you know, understands that they're not going to know everything and gets help, then you can run the country because our institutions are pretty strong. But if you've got somebody that is not very self-aware and doesn't have a whole lot of contextual awareness, then that's where you start to have problems. And, you know, you see it from over there. You know, that's why there's a lot of distrust for what's going on over here.
Well, do you know what? That's what we see of Trump. We see the tweets and we think, you know, a lot of the tweets he puts out, I wouldn't tweet. And I'm thinking, I'm thinking, doesn't anyone tell this guy to put his phone away or something? Because it's unbelievable.
Of course they do. But that's the whole point, right? He's just, that's who he is. I mean, I don't know him well, but I know him fairly well. And that's just who he is.
Yeah.
And, you know, he never makes a mistake in his mind. It's always somebody else, and he can do no wrong. Mm. And if you can do no wrong, then everything that you tweet or say, you think is right. Mm. And, you know, that he's just, you know, it's just something we have to deal with. And look, my New Year's resolution was to press the mute button on Donald Trump and not look at his tweets and not, you know, not pay attention to that. And just look to see what he does or doesn't do. And if you just look at what he has done or hasn't done, there's some things that, like any president or like any prime minister, you're going to look at and say, okay, I agree, and some things you disagree. And, you know, if you just set aside all the stuff he says, because most people ignore that anyways, then okay, he's a marginal president. He's not as horrible as he sounds with all the tweets. So I've really tried to put him on mute, just look to see what happens and see what types of actions he's taking, and, you know, we'll see what happens from there.
In a sense, you're not a huge fan, but what is the feeling like in America? I mean, apart from the Trump supporters, is there, like, a lot of people like yourself thinking, you know, we'll just say, like, we'll put him on mute for as long as we can? Is that the thought?
I mean, you know, yeah, of course. It's like the UK, right? You guys are dealing with Brexit, right? Yeah. Should it happen? Did we reconsider? You know, it was, you know, you look at the election and you say, oh, my goodness, what happened? And then you really start to think it through, and you say to yourself, here we are. And, you know, we're going to try to make the best of it. But the reality is people just live their lives. Mm-hmm. You know, more people can tell you about Beyonce's twins than can tell you about our vice president or Brexit. Right.
Yeah.
People just aren't that aware politically in this country. And, you know, if you just watch all the cable news networks that talk about politics all the time, then, you know, you'd think the world is going to hell in a handbasket. But, you know, 99% of the people in this country don't do that. They live their lives. They try to do the best for their families, and they go from there. And I think, you know, like the UK, it's our people that are going to really make the difference. You know, he may be here for 4 years, but, you know, this country will go on a lot longer beyond him. And, you know, whether Brexit happens or doesn't happen, you know, the UK will go on a lot longer, this, with or without Theresa May, with or without Brexit. It's the same for both of us.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And just before I ask you one final question, I mean, I don't know what you see on Brexit or what the kind of, you know, footage you get. I mean, what are your thoughts on it? I mean, if you have any.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it was a movement that most people in the UK got surprised by. That's my perception. Yeah. And then, like anything else, there are a lot of people in this country that weren't Donald Trump fans, but they wanted to send a message that we are tired of the same old, same old. You know, one of my friends here in Dallas, you know, in Texas, is a red state and voted for Donald Trump. And I was like, why would you vote for this guy? I mean, and I gave him all the reasons. He goes, look, Mark, let me just tell you this. He's in his 50s. He goes, I've been voting for politicians my entire life. Mm-hmm. And you know what that where that got me? It got me nothing. You know the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. I'm not voting for a politician. And so everybody voted against politicians, in particular Hillary Clinton. And then all of a sudden we got Donald Trump, and now we're dealing with the reality. And I think Brexit was the same thing. People were tired of being told what to do. People were tired of the same old, same old. And this was their chance to send a message that, you know, we want things to change. Now, like anything else, you've got to deal with the reality at some point. And that's what's happening over there with Brexit. And, you know, you're closer, obviously, to it than I am. But it sounds like, you know, people are having second thoughts, and maybe there'll be another vote. And that'll give everybody a chance to, you know, say what's on their mind again. And I think, you know, even over here, Hillary Clinton got more votes. And who knows what would happen if there's a second Brexit vote. What do you think will happen? Do you think there's going to be another vote?
I don't know. I think people are tired of voting, you know, of referendums. And you've got, let's be honest, I mean, even if people did vote to make a stand, you know, that was the majority. And now if you overthrow that, then the majority of those people are going to be annoyed. You know, I mean, it has sort of parted the country. I know friends that are, you know, not speaking to each other. They've unfriended each other on Facebook because of it. It really has separated people, you know. And
same thing's happened here.
It's very controversial. And so I mean, just one thing. I mean, you have, I don't know if he was joking or not, but I mean, you did sort of mention, and someone said, why didn't you run for president? And I don't know if you were joking there, but do you have any ambitions in that area?
I mean, it's not my lifetime dream to be president. Mm. It's going to depend what happens in our midterm elections in November of 2018. If the Democrats win, then there's no reason for me to run, right? There will be balance and hopefully harmony and hopefully some reality. But if the Republicans win, then I'll have to give it a much more serious consideration. I think our country's ready for an independent candidate. I mean, we only have two major parties, right? And all the others are tiny and basically irrelevant. And I think people are so tired of the partisanship and the tribalism. You know, it's like you said, you know, people unfriended each other and became, you know, stopped being friends over Brexit. Yeah. The same is happening here, where Republicans and Democrats won't talk to each other, you know, where people would just avoid politics altogether. And I think there could be a place for an independent candidate. And so if I did run, it'd probably be as an independent. But I don't have to make that decision for a while.
Final question, Mark. You've achieved perhaps in your lifetime what many people won't achieve in 10 lifetimes. So what's left here now? Ambition-wise, what do you still want to do? What do you think I need to do this? You know, what's left?
Yeah, I just try to be opportunistic, right? I just try to keep on learning and helping and impacting. I guess, you know, trying to have an impact on communities and, you know, help, you know, make the world a little bit better place than what I found it. And, you know, I got three kids that are young, 8, 11, and 14. And, you know, like everybody, it doesn't matter how much money you have, you still worry about your kids' health. You still worry about their future. You worry about their well-being and, you know, trying to do things that make the world a better place for them. Yeah. You know, because no matter, it's funny, because no matter how much money you have, they always say you can't take it with you. And, you know, as I get older, it's like, shit, You know, it's not about that. It's I got these three little human beings that I worry a whole lot more about, like anybody else, than I do about, you know, how much money I have in the bank. And so I think I'm going through that transition where, okay, let's try to do something for them instead of for me. And that's it's exciting, but it's also challenging.
Yeah, and I suppose when you have children, like you say, and you are very wealthy, that in itself carries a whole lot of problems, doesn't it? You know.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's better than being broke.
Yeah.
In a big way. You know, I whenever someone says, "Oh, it's tough to be rich," I'm like, "Yeah, get over it." Mm. But at the same time, it scares me. I, you know, like I tell them, I don't want them to grow up and be entitled jerks. You know, I don't just give them money. I make them earn it. And, you know, it's very clear to them that they're going to have to get jobs and, you know, they're going to be minimum wage jobs so that they understand what it's like to have to work and what it's like, you know, to have to pay your own bills. And, you know, I'll never, you know, there'll always be that cushion and they'll know it. And, you know, you can't fake that. But, you know, they certainly already know that they're going to have to earn their own way and learn their own way.
Mark, it's been great to chat to you, and I really do appreciate you taking the time out, because I know you're a busy guy, and thanks for taking up the offer there and coming on, and hopefully, you never know, we may speak again, and I may be standing there in front of you on Shark Tank, you never know, but...
I hope so, bring it on. Good luck with the podcast.
For updates on the latest episodes, please subscribe to our channel.